Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're doing something a little different, a little more specific.
Yes.
If you are listening to this, chances are you're a brand new employee here at FirdOcean. So first of all, welcome aboard.
Yes, welcome. A big welcome.
But this isn't your, you know, your standard here's where the cafeteria is kind of orientation.
Not at all.
We are here as part of your onboarding module to tackle something that, well, honestly, it trips up even the smartest people we hire.
It really does. Mm-hmm. We're talking about the invisible software that's running in the background of every single meeting you're about to have.
Right.
And if you don't know how to read that code, you're going to crash the whole system.
Okay, let's set the scene then. You've just joined the team. You're sitting in an office. Maybe it's HQ in Oslo, maybe Copenhagen, or maybe you're working remotely. Mm-hmm. You jump on a Teams call to talk about a really critical project. Oh. And on the other side of that screen is your new counterpart in, say, Shanghai or Kuala Lumpur or Mumbai.
And you are both brilliant. You are both hired because you are the absolute best at what you do.
Yeah.
You're both speaking English. The connection is perfect.
And yet, you are having two completely different conversations.
Completely different.
You walk away thinking it was a great brainstorming session. They walk away thinking it was a disorganized lecture.
You're waiting for their feedback. They're waiting for your orders.
Like, you think it went great. They think it was a total disaster.
And nobody says a thing. Not until the deadline is screaming past.
Exactly. So our mission today is to decode that invisible software. We're going to try and bridge the gap between that Northern European working style, the sort of FirdOcean vibe, and the Asian working context where so much of our growth is actually happening.
We're pulling from a really solid stack of research for this. Hofstede's work, studies on virtual leadership by Baptista, frameworks on cultural intelligence.
From early Mosakowski Eng, it's a long list.
It is. And we have to get this right. I mean, there's a 2023 study by Al Niadi that found that failing to manage this stuff doesn't just make things awkward.
No.
It leads to, and this is a direct quote, fragmented teams.
Which is just a very polite way of saying total dysfunction.
Basically, yeah. If we don't fix this, we lose speed, we lose some of our best talent, and frankly, we lose money.
All right, let's dive in. We have a lot of ground to cover, but I want to start with the big one. If you could give our new FirdOcean hire just one lens, you know, one single idea to help them understand why their new colleague is acting so differently, what is it?
It has to be power distance.
Power distance. Yeah. Okay, let's unpack this because it sounds like an engineering term.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it's all about social engineering. It comes from Geert Hofstede's framework.
Yeah.
And we have some great data from Medium on this.
So what is it?
Put simply, power distance is the extent to which the less powerful members of an organization expect and actually accept that power is distributed unequally.
Wait, hold on a second. So it's not about how bossy the manager is.
Yeah.
It's about how much the employee expects and wants the manager to be the boss.
That is precisely it, is the expectation from the bottom up. And this is the fundamental disconnect between FirdOcean's Nordic roots and many of our Asian operations.
Okay, let's look at the Northern European side first. I'm seeing data here from Manium and, of course, the classic Scandinavian data.
Right. So Northern Europe is what we call a low-power distance culture.
Which means we like things flat.
Extremely flat. If you're sitting in our Oslo office, the ideal hierarchy is basically invisible. You expect to be consulted on decisions.
Door is always open.
Right. If the CEO walks into the cafeteria, you might nod, say, hey, but you don't freeze up. You don't, you know, wait for permission to finish your lunch.
I'd go even further. If my boss lays out a plan and I see a flaw in it,
where?
I feel like it's my job to speak up, to say, hey, wait, have we thought about X?
Of course.
In my head, that's me being a good, engaged employee.
Exactly. You're showing that you care. But now you have to flip that script entirely.
Mm.
Look at Manium's data on Malaysia or Hofstede's on China. These are high power distance cultures.
So the hierarchy there isn't just a chart on a wall. It's a social necessity.
It's seen as natural, even existential. There's a deep, deep respect for authority. In these contexts, a good leader is expected to lead, clearly.
Okay, so play out the scenario for me. I'm a well-meaning manager from Norway. I get on a call with my team in Kuala Lumpur. I want to be inclusive, so I say, so I'm not really sure what the right answer is here, guys. What do you all think we should do?
You think you're being a great democratic leader.
I do.
They think you're incompetent.
Ouch. Really? That's strong.
Absolutely. They're sitting there thinking, why on earth are you asking us? You're the boss. You're paid to have the answer. Your attempt to flatten the hierarchy doesn't create safety. It creates anxiety.
Because they're waiting for the captain to steer the ship.
And the captain is on the bridge, asking the crew for a map.
And this must get even worse online, right? I'm looking at this 2022 research from Baptista on virtual teams.
Oh, Baptista makes a brilliant point here. The technology itself, Teams, Slack, all of it, is inherently horizontal.
Because everyone is just a little square on the screen.
Exactly. Your video feed is the same size as the CEO's. That digital architecture really suits the Northern European mindset. It feels equal.
But
Baptista warns that for colleagues from places like India or China, this creates what he calls integration problems.
Because all the physical cues of hierarchy are gone.
Stripped away. In a physical room in Mumbai, you know where the boss sits. You know who enters the room first. You can read the nonverbal cues. On Zoom, that's all gone.
So they're waiting for that social signal, like a nod from the boss giving them permission to speak?
But technology hides it.
Mm.
So while the Europeans are all jumping in, talking over each other, brainstorming.
The Asian colleagues are sitting there, silent.
Which brings us directly to the silent meeting trap.
Yeah, we have a case study here from the CQ workshop materials that is almost painful to read.
I know the one.
It describes a virtual project meeting with a mix of North European and East Asian engineers.
A classic for Ocean setup.
So here's what happened. The Europeans did what Europeans do. They talked a lot, interrupted each other to clarify things. They were thinking out loud.
Hmm.
And the East Asian team members were mostly silent, just listening.
And this is the critical part. It's not the silence itself that's the problem. It's the interpretation of the silence.
Right. The source says the Europeans left that meeting convinced the Asian team was disengaged, or worse, unprepared.
They didn't have any ideas. They didn't even do the reading.
Meanwhile, the Asian team saw the Europeans' behavior, all the interrupting and talking over each other, as deeply disrespectful. Aggressive, even.
A total lack of self-control.
So both sides walk away questioning the other's professionalism.
And nobody says a word.
Yeah.
That right there is the clash between individualism and collectivism.
We hear those terms all the time. Can you break them down in this specific context?
Sure. So the North European style is typically individualist. It's task-focused. Let's get straight to the point. Truth over feelings.
Right.
So if you have a good idea, you speak up. That's how you show your individual worth to the team.
Whereas the collectivist approach is all about the group.
It's about harmony. It's about face. In many Asian contexts, protecting the relationship is way more important than correcting a small fact in real time.
So if I publicly disagree with you in a meeting...
You've made me lose face. And that damages the group's harmony, which is the worst possible outcome. So I will choose to stay silent rather than risk that.
But it gets more nuanced than that, doesn't it? I'm looking at Triandis's work, and he adds this layer of horizontal versus vertical.
I love this part. Because, let's be honest, a Norwegian is not the same as an American, even if both are Western.
Definitely not. Americans often want to be the star of the show. Norwegians, not so much.
And Triandis explains why. He calls Scandinavian culture horizontal individualism. You are your own person, you do your own thing, but you absolutely do not want to stick out.
It's the law of Jonte. Don't think you're anything special.
Exactly. Now, compare that to what he calls vertical collectivism, which you might find in, say, rural China or India.
Okay.
There, it's about serving the group, yes, but also deeply respecting the clear hierarchy within that group. So you have a Norwegian who wants to speak up, but modestly, clashing with a Chinese colleague who wants to preserve harmony and defer to the boss.
It's an absolute minefield.
It is. And if you're not paying attention, you're going to step right on a mine.
Okay, so we have now successfully terrified our new employee.
Probably, yes.
They're afraid to speak up and they're afraid to stay silent. How do we fix this? We can't just send everyone to a psychology lecture.
No, absolutely not. You need to build a skill, and the research has a name for it. Cultural intelligence, or CQ.
Is that just another buzzword for, you know, being open-minded?
It's more than that. The researchers, Ang and others, they define CQ as a capability. It's not a personality trait you're born with. It's a muscle you can actually build.
I like that.
And the framework from Early and Mozakowski breaks it down into three parts, which makes it easy to remember. The head, the body, and the heart.
Okay, head, body, heart. Let's start with the head, the cognitive part.
Right. This is all about your strategy. It's about realizing that just memorizing a list of rules doesn't work. In Japan, bow like this. In India, don't do that. It's too rigid.
You need to be a detective, not a walking encyclopedia.
That's the perfect way to put it.
Huh.
The source calls this the analyst approach. You go into a situation looking for clues. Who makes eye contact with whom before they speak? How are decisions really being made here? You're decoding the rules of that specific room, not a whole country.
Okay, that makes sense. Then we have the body, the physical part, and there's a word here that makes me a little nervous. Mimicry.
It sounds bad, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like you're mocking someone.
Yeah, look at me. I'm doing the thing you do. That seems like a terrible idea.
Well, you have to be subtle, obviously. But the research on this is really strong. The source tells a story about a manager in Shanghai called Ming.
Okay.
When he meets foreign guests, he consciously adjusts his own physical style. If his American guests speak fast and loud, Ming picks up his pace a little. He matches their level of eye contact.
And if they're more reserved?
He slows down. He lowers his volume. And what the data shows is that people don't see this as mocking. They see it as comforting. It makes the interaction feel less foreign. It's a subconscious signal that says, hey, I'm like you. You can trust me.
So it's more like mirroring. You're just tuning your frequency to match theirs.
Exactly. You're building a bridge with your behavior, not just your words.
And that leaves the heart, the emotional, motivational part.
And this is probably the hardest one. This is about resilience. It's the confidence to keep trying even after you inevitably mess up.
Because you will mess up.
Oh, you will. You'll tell a joke that doesn't land. You'll interrupt the wrong person at the wrong time.
And the instinct is to just pull back. Okay, I'm done. I'll just stick to email from now on.
Right. But having high CQ, a strong heart, means you get back in there. And the research has a kind of counterintuitive finding here.
What's that?
People who are a little bit detached from their own culture often find it easier to adapt.
Really? I would have thought a strong sense of self would be a good thing.
It can be, but if you're too rigid, if you think this is the Norwegian way and it is the only right way, then adapting feels like a betrayal of who you are.
Ah, I see.
But if you see your culture as just one tool in a big toolkit, you don't mind picking up a different tool for a different job. You don't feel like a fake. You feel like a flexible professional.
Yeah. The workshop materials compare to employees. Let's call them employee A and employee B.
Right. Employee A is the academic. They read the book on Chinese business etiquette, and they follow the rules to the letter. The book said never say no, so I will never say no.
And they just end up confusing everyone because they're acting like a robot.
Exactly. But employee B is more like a sensor. They're monitoring the reactions in the room. They might notice, oh, wait, this specific team in Shanghai actually seems to appreciate direct feedback. So they adjust their style.
They focus on the real people in front of them, not just the textbook.
That's everything. Context is everything.
And I want to pause on that because we've been using these huge, sweeping labels, Asian, European, and Asia is a massive place.
It's dangerously big to generalize about.
This is where that research from Gelfand comes in, right?
Yeah.
The idea of tight versus loose culture.
Yes, this is the layer of nuance that can save you from making a huge mistake. Gelfand basically categorizes cultures based on how strictly they enforce their social norms.
Okay, so give us the breakdown.
A tight culture has really strong norms and a very low tolerance for breaking the rules. Japan is a classic example. Singapore is another.
Punctuality is everything. Process is king.
Right. If the meeting is at 9.00, you are in your seat at 8.55. No exceptions.
And a loose culture.
Think of Thailand. Sabay sabay. It's relaxed. It's comfortable. The norms are much more flexible. The U.S., in many ways, is also quite a loose culture.
So, as a Ferocean manager, if I treat my team in Thailand with the same rigid, formal style that I use with my team in Japan,
you will completely suffocate them. You'll kill their creativity. You have to adjust your style based on the tightness of that specific national culture, not the continent.
Okay, we have the theory, we have the nuance. Let's get really practical for the person starting tomorrow. What are the actual strategies? Baptista and Caliuri have some good ones.
The first and simplest is adaptation. Just acknowledge the difference out loud. Say something like, look, I know my style can be very direct, so please tell me if I'm missing the point here.
I really like the next one, though. Fusion.
Fusion is the goal for long-term teams.
Yeah.
Baptista gives this great example of a UK-US team. The Americans wanted to move fast, make a decision, take action, go, go, go.
And the Brits wanted to be more thorough, analyze everything, debate, verify.
The classic speed versus accuracy battle. So instead of one side just giving in, they created a third way. They designed a decision-making process that was faster than the British team was used to, but more thorough than the Americans were. They created a new team culture.
But, and for us at Ferdocean, this is a huge Sometimes we can't compromise. Safety, for example.
This is critical, and this is where Caligiuri's idea of cultural minimization comes in. Usually we're told to celebrate our differences, but when it comes to safety, we have to minimize our differences.
Right. If you are on a rig and you see a pressure gauge in the red, I don't care if you come from a high power distance culture where you never question the boss.
You speak up.
You speak up immediately.
Exactly. In that one specific context, our professional safety culture has to override any national culture. And we have to be really explicit about that. Say it in the briefing. For safety, there is no hierarchy. Everyone has stop work authority.
That is such a vital distinction. Adapt on communication style, fuse your team processes, but minimize differences on safety.
And there's one final warning I want to give from some research by Hajro. It's a bias called skill discounting.
Yeah, this one really hit me when I was reading the prep material.
It's a nasty cognitive trick our brains play on us. When we struggle to understand someone's accent, or when their communication styles are different, like the silence we talked about, we subconsciously start to think they're less intelligent.
We confuse their fluency in English with their actual competence.
We do it all the time. We discount their skills. We think, oh, he's very quiet. He must not really understand the engineering. And just like that, Fert Ocean starts to lose the value of that person. We paid for their incredible brain, but we stop listening to it because we don't like the packaging. Yeah. That is the ultimate cost of low cultural intelligence.
That's a huge takeaway. Just because the packaging is different doesn't mean the gift inside isn't incredibly valuable.
Well said.
So we have covered a lot of ground. We've talked about the hierarchy gap, that power distance tension. We've looked at the silent meeting trap, and we've broken down CQ into head, body, and heart. And we've added that layer of tight versus loose cultures.
That's a pretty full cool kit.
As we wrap up this deep dive, is there one last thought, one final idea you want to leave our new Fert Ocean team member with?
I want to leave them with a metaphor from Tung and Verbeek. They call it the ocean metaphor.
Very fitting for Fert Ocean.
Very fitting. They argue that we should stop thinking of culture as a solid block of ice. It's not fixed. It's fluid, like an ocean.
Mm.
Just because someone comes from a high power distance culture doesn't mean they can't be a disruptive innovator. Some values can lie dormant, deep under the surface, until the right event, the right context, brings them to life.
So don't ever put people in a box.
Never. If you, as a colleague or a leader, create the right kind of psychological safety, that silent engineer could become your most vocal and brilliant problem solver. The ocean surface changes with the weather. You are the weather.
I love that. So here is your call to action, all you new hires at Fert Ocean. In your very next virtual meeting, for just 5 minutes, stop thinking about what you're going to say next. Just watch. Just listen. Who is interrupting? Who is silent? And then ask yourself, are they actually disengaged, or am I just seeing them through my own cultural lens?
That's the first step.
Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive. Good luck with your onboarding, and please stay safe out there.